Hello, hello, hello. You know what time it is. This is your host, SS Kitty, and this is the Current Ritual Public Affairs Show on KD&K Radio. And today I am so excited to kick off the new year with my guest today, Hamilton Pevick, in the house. If you don't know Hamilton, you probably should. Hamilton is an amateur mycologist and a filmmaker. He's a Carbondale local favorite, maybe a little bit of a celebrity in Carbondale. And so we're here to talk about mushrooms. Mushrooms have become a trendy almost thing, a mainstream thing after all this time of sort of being in the shadows. And so, Hamilton, welcome to the Current Ritual Show.
Thank you so much, Kat. Thank you for having me here. I'm very happy to be here and talk about fungi and movies, which are two of my absolute favorite subjects.
Yes, and we could talk about a ton, so we'll try to stay focused. So let's start with the film, your recent travels, and tell the audience, people who may not be aware, about your recent film and the award you received.
Thank you. My new film is called Azurescens Through a Blue Lens, and it recently premiered at the Fungi Film Festival in Portland, Oregon, where I went to attend to a sold-out opening night at the film festival, and that was wonderful. And then I received the most edutaining award for my film, and so it's very nice to be recognized for my work.
Did you say edutaining?
Edutaining.
Oh, I like that. So yeah. It was educational and entertaining.
Yes.
That's what that. I just want to declare that for the listeners in case anybody else was like, what did he say?
Yeah. And then I brought the film festival to Carbondale on December 20th at the launch pad to another sold out show, standing room only. And it was tons of fun. And it was really this affirming community building experience for me, just to see all the support and all the people come out to that are interested in mushrooms and fungi. And I'm really looking forward to next year hosting the festival in Carbondale again, with or without one of my own films. I'm definitely going to enter another film into the festival. and I'm just thrilled that there was so much interest in the films themselves, but also in mushrooms in general. And my film explores a particular mushroom called Psilocybe azurescens, which is the most potent magic mushroom found in nature.
Okay, and magic mushroom meaning that it has the psychoactive component, psilocybin.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And psilocybin is one of a number of active alkaloids that has an entourage effect that gives us the psychedelic experience that we know is tripping. And so,
and they're not all equal. So different mushrooms have different alkaloids and different concentrations that
Correct.
Provide a different effect on the nervous
Correct.
System.
Correct. So psilocybin and psilocin are the most well-known. And then there's aruginacin and baocystin and norbaocystin and norpsilocin. And there's others. I don't know them all, but we're discovering new ones all the time. In fact, there was a paper released a few weeks ago by Juliana Ferci and a number of other authors basically describing how little we know about the genus Psilocybe, which is the one that contains all the magic mushroom, or most of the magic mushrooms. And there's, you know, we don't understand their genetics, we don't understand their active alkaloids, and there's so much to learn about this particular genus. So I'm excited to see what comes out of, you know, contemporary research. And so the topic of magic mushrooms, psilocybin-containing mushrooms, is so massive, I couldn't cover everything in a single film. You know, the film
right.
is only half an hour, so it's really just a snapshot or a postcard, if you will, of this mushroom and the relationships that surround it. So I was I went on a journey, a literal physical journey, a pilgrimage with my brother and our friend Fred from Arcata, California, all the way up the coast to northern Oregon, to the very small geographic area where this mushroom is found along the northern Oregon coast and the Washington coast. And this is like a very, very small geographic area. So a lot of people go just to this one small spot to harvest this mushroom. And this has a major impact on the environment there.
Right.
So there's a lot of controversy about not only talking about where to find it, but going out to find it yourself and like how to harvest it sustainably and responsibly and ecologically. And like, why are these people going there to right. find the medicine? You know, are they right. just going because they've heard about it? Are they going to collect medicine for themselves? Are they going it for find it for recreational purposes and so on and so forth? And there's this, you know, human impact on the environment there. And the story explores what that means. There's the story of the pilgrimage, like going to hunt this famous mushroom. Mm-hmm. And then there's the story of the role the mushroom plays in ecology, which is like, what's it actually doing in the environment? And it is a primary decomposer, which means that it's out there consuming dead material. In this case, it's the dune grass, the European dune grass, which was introduced at the turn of the century to manage the sand. And so it's one of these classic invasive species stories where the humans did something. In this case, they built a jetty, and then the jetty disrupted the sand, and it caused rampaging dunes. And these dunes like destroyed pasture land and buried farms and moved away inland, up to half a mile inland. And then the European settlers were like, what do we do? So they introduced European beech grass and Scotch broom, which have now become like two of the most invasive species on the Pacific Northwest coast.
Wow.
And then, lo and behold, they discover that this mushroom grows with these two invasive species and decomposes it.
Mm.
And so now we're looking at sort of nature
healing itself.
Exactly. Healing itself, responding to these invasive species. I mean, invasive is a strong word to use, you know.
Right.
Not my first choice, but I started using it, so I just stuck with it.
Okay, fair enough.
introduced species.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of this primary decomposer, you have, after about 40 years, that beech grass will turn into topsoil.
Right.
And it will stop offsetting all these other species. So basically it's endangering all these indigenous species of plants and animals. But now we understand that because it actually can turn into topsoil now, that it's not the massive problem that we thought it was.
Interesting. And I love that your film covered that and in such depth and awareness, because that is one of the biggest issues and why we're having this interview today. You know, this is why we're having this show. This is why I'm talking about it, is because I see that we're on the precipice of this big change, you know, with the mushrooms and coming in and the Proposition 122 being passed in Colorado, which we'll get to. But there's a little bit of urgency that I feel because of consumer education, you know, the needing to be, because devastating habitats, you know, cultivating and protecting indigenous, including peyote, you know, and all these mm-hmm. other things mm-hmm. that are being poached and
right.
and misused. And so, you know, it's one of those things. I'm not a huge fan of government regulation, you know, but it seems to be inevitable in this, mm-hmm. you know, realm that we're living in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so that's where I think we as a community, and I'm so grateful for your role in raising this awareness and spreading this knowledge, because I almost feel like that has the most impact on how this goes for the environment, how this goes for harm reduction and safety, and how this goes for our community members. Because, you know, using these mushrooms, the goal, what's the goal here?
Right.
You know, like, what is our goal? Why are we doing this?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Everybody needs to stop.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Why are you engaging this way?
Well, I think the mushroom, in the context of the film, it's a good metaphor for what you're talking about right now, because there's always the danger of over-harvesting wild things.
Right.
But there's also all kinds of solutions to that, like cultivating it. For example, one of the characters in my film felt guilty about like sharing the location of these mushrooms and then causing all this damage to the land from human impacts. So created a secret group to go out and spread mushroom spawn in similar habitats where the dune grass grows and the scotch broom grows, not only to preserve the species, but to create new places for humans to go. So it's not hyper concentrated in this one thing. Now, that's one possible solution. Mm-hmm. And Ecology 101 says, oh, no, don't go spreading species around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tail of this mushroom, you know, reacting to the grass, which is reacting to the sand, which is catalyzed by the humans, you know, it's this chain reaction of effect.
Right.
And we have choices. You know, we're a powerful force of nature as humans. You know, we can move mountains quite literally. And so, for example, like cultivation is one of the solutions to lessening the ecological impacts of wild harvesting.
Right.
And, you know, as a metaphor for the medicine, and as we move into this new space and as our laws change and this medicine becomes more accessible to the people, we can look to nature to find our solutions around that. For example, you know, when people ask me, like, you know, what makes mushrooms medicinal, I like to say that the first medicine that mushrooms offer is going out into the forest and walking in the woods and hiking and breathing fresh air and taking your health into your own hands.
Right.
And that's the first step, literally and figuratively, in the healing process.
So much agreed. That's with all of my clients in my private practice. That's one of the wounds that I attempt to heal, is I've realized where Western medicine has sort of taken away people's sovereignty in certain ways, where, you know, you go to the doctor to be diagnosed by someone who knows better than you about you, mm-hmm. and then tells you what to do or gives you a pill to fix you. And mm-hmm. for me, that paradigm is just outdated and incorrect and incomplete. And so that's one of my biggest jobs, is just reminding people, like, you're sovereign over your choices. That's you're right. sovereign over your body. Mm-hmm. And you get to have a relationship with your body, with the earth, with how you feed it, with how you nourish it, with yeah. how you take substances.
Yeah. With your medicine.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I love that you brought that up. And so as far as our community, if people are curious, and more people are curious about mushrooms, I get
Absolutely.
Questions all the time from all walks of, you know, life. Mm-hmm. And for me, this medicine really is for everyone because of the nervous system. Like, for me, it's a neuromodulator. You know, it affects the nervous system. It affects the wiring of the brain. It affects gut health. You know, it's sort of the systemic effect. Mushrooms have this systemic effect, and it especially affects the nervous system. That's why I'm so interested, because I've been in nervous system level health care since 2008. And so to me, this is like another tool in the toolkit, mm-hmm. which a lot of people aren't talking about, but I'm super interested in, like, stroke rehab and neuro rehab and cerebral palsy and autism and all that stuff. Like, but that's, again, like what you said, we don't know a lot about the genus of the psychedelic mushrooms, you know, like, and then people, you know, are to all into mental health. We haven't even gotten into the neuro rehab conversation hardly in this, like, stew that's going on right now.
Welcome to the experiment.
I know, right? That's what this is. To all the listeners, that's why we're talking, because we want you all to know this is all experimental. Yeah. This is all new. And we as a community are going to have to really be aware, because the system is going to be created as we go.
Yeah. And the people that are already in the space, in the mushroom space, not only as a, you know, foragers or cultivators or medicinal mushroom people or magic mushroom people, we are the tip of the spear. We are the hyphal point moving into a new substrate, moving into a new culture around this medicine. And, you know, as we spoke before the show started, there's a kind of revolution happening around mycology. Some people call it a renaissance. Mm-hmm. But it's an opportunity for us to access this fungal technology in so many aspects of our life, because mycology, mushrooms, fungi, they affect all of these different aspects of our life, from our food systems to our mental health systems to our physiology, to when you look at applied mycology, there are fungal solutions for a number of our design problems. Not only things like using mycelium to create packaging, but using mycelium to create building materials, which are lighter, stronger, fire resistant, you know, all of these has so many amazing applications. And the medicine side is just one side of this giant experiment that we're moving into together.
Right.
And so it's really important for all of us that are already existing in this medicinal mushroom space to be educators, to be learners, to provide support and community, do community building things, and to just be present for each other as we grow into this new space.
Right. And I definitely think you and I have sort of taken it on ourselves to take, to be willing and able to have some leadership with these roles. And so in that regard, I want to next go to talking about the, so there's two things. There's a mycological society that I want you to like just let our listeners sure. know, or any people who are in this realm who might listen and want to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that piece?
Sure. So we are at the very beginning of creating the Western Colorado Mycological Society. That's our working title for now. And so we just want to create an organization, people-run grassroots organization that elevates mycology in our side of the mountains. You know, we call it Western Colorado so that we can have the largest reach possible. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be our standard issue mushroom club where we're going to bring in mycologists to do presentations. We're going to lead public forays, member forays. We're going to have mycology events. And, you know, as much as I am catalyzing this group with another group of locals, including Mateo Rader and Gabriela Mieja and Jake Renner and Jane Mason. This is our initial group board of directors. As much as we are starting this now, I really want this organization to take on a life of its own mm-hmm. and to grow and thrive for generations to come as a resource for the community.
Awesome.
To learn about wild mushroom identification, mushroom cultivation, applied mycology, and all of the cool things that mushrooms have to offer us. We're going to do all kinds of fun and cool stuff. So if you're interested in this kind of thing, you know, please stay tuned. You can go to my website, hamiltonsmushrooms.com, sign up for my email list, and then you'll be the first to know about where you can become a member.
Oh, perfect. That's what I was going to ask. So hamiltonsmushrooms.com mm-hmm. and then sign up for your email list, and that's how they'll stay tuned with this.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's Jake Renner and I have had some conversations about he and I collaborating to do more children, like in family-based stuff.
Nice.
Because
nice.
That's what, you know, we're thinking is it would be really beautiful to teach children about mushrooms. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and if anybody realizes, like, mushroom, there's not just psychedelic mushrooms. Mushrooms have, like, as you said, all of these uses and all of these beautiful tools. And so two things, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit,
but
I want to ask a question and have you talk about the Cold Fire Project. But my question was, I heard a story. Is it true that Japan used mushrooms to create their subway system? Have you heard this story? If you haven't heard it, then just ignore my question.
Yeah, I think, I know what you're talking about. This was an experiment that was done. They actually researchers created a map of the UK. It wasn't Japan.
Oh, okay.
It was the UK. And basically they put food sources, little bits of oats, on the map to mark each city,
mm-hmm.
like each major metropolitan area. And then they ran the mycelium through the substrate, which was some kind of agar, and which is like a potato dextrose mix. It's just like the medium for the mycelium to move through.
Okay.
But as the mycelium moved through this this substrate, looking for the food, which was the oats, it created the most direct way from food source to food source. So one branch of the mycelium would move out in one direction And then if it didn't find any food, it would stop. And it would allocate resources to move in another direction. And when it found food, it would allocate more resources to go to that food. And as it spread through this plate with scattered bits of food, it found all the food. And then they laid a map of the UK over the mycelium pattern. Mm-hmm. And it mapped exactly the roadways of the country.
Oh, wow.
Which was basically proving that these are the most efficient routes that the roads could have gone on.
Right.
You know, like, you humans made a good choice putting the road here because right. that was the same choice the mycelia made going towards the food.
Right. And that's like proving its consciousness too, and its its intelligence.
Definitely intelligence. I think consciousness around mycelial consciousness is an interesting conversation. I right. think there's definitely an argument to say that mushrooms are not vegan. You know, they respond to us. They know where we are. Like, we're literally walking on them, and they know where the things are that are putting pressure on them.
Right.
They use electricity to communicate. Researchers last year found something like 50 plus quote unquote words in different electrical impulses that were traveling through the mycelial network.
Wow.
They exchange information in the form of carbon and sugar, trading information with other plants and trees. So there's a lot of intelligence, you know, I use that word.
Right.
You know,
I'm like, that's Pachamama's like brain. Yeah. Like, I don't know. No one knows this, like what you said.
And
is
when you look at
all uncharted,
when you look at, you know, how do you define intelligence and consciousness? Mycelium does meet some of those requirements. And if you look at the shape, the mycelial shape, like how these networks form themselves, they resemble very much the shape of our synapses in our brain, and they right. resemble the shape of the internet, and they resemble mm-hmm. the shape of the cosmos. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a sacred geometry that, you know, given a chance, we will organize ourselves in such a way.
Right. I couldn't agree more. So that's the next thing is, so then can you comment on the Cold Fire Project?
Yes, the Cold Fire Project is a collaboration between myself, Dr. Lauren Chaplicki, based out of Durango, Jeff Ravage, who's based out of Evergreen, Colorado, and it's initially based on Jeff Ravage's work out of the Forestry Service, where he looked at fungal decomposition rates. And did a 5-year study that showed that when you introduce white rot fungus to a pile of wood chips, it will decompose much, much faster than the natural decomposition rate compared to piles of wood chips that didn't have mushrooms inoculated or didn't have, you know, introduced mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took those results and said, like, okay, the sort of standard natural decomposition rate in Colorado for pine chips at this aspect ratio and this elevation was 40 years, and introduced an indigenous oyster mushroom, which is a delicious gourmet edible medicinal mushroom, and accelerated the decomposition rate down to 2 to 3 years.
Whoa.
And so what he's proposing in his research is, rather than the conventional method of fire mitigation where you cut and remove and ultimately burn the fuels that would drive the fire, so all the deadfall, all the dry branches, all the dry shrubs, those are called ladder fuels. They help the fire climb and move through the forest.
Right.
And cause like complete destruction. Mm-hmm. Where what he's proposing is that we take all those burn fuels, and rather than move them out of the area, we chip them in place and inoculate them.
Wow.
And then we accelerate the decomposition rate. We capture all that carbon that would have been released into the atmosphere anyway.
Because it's preventing the burning.
That's
the
right.
Preventative burning. Well,
you're thinning,
it like replaces it.
You're thinning the forest.
Yeah.
And that creates space between the trees so that the fire can't travel so well. And you're mimicking the more ancient model of these forests. like our forests all around us in the White River National Forest here, they haven't burned in 100 years because we've been controlling those fires. Right. And now there's this hyper dense fuel source there that where any spark can trigger a catastrophe for us.
Right.
And it's this, it's our controlling of the fires which has removed us from the natural cycles. So the forests are super dense. In a natural setting, they wouldn't be so dense because they would be naturally burning annually in ways where the strong trees survive. And he was talking about these ancient models of forests that are like copses of dense copses of big old trees separated by meadows.
Mm.
Where, like, if small trees turn up, then they are cleaned by the fire.
Okay.
And this model just doesn't really exist anymore in the West. An interesting side note, the National Forest Service was created right after a massive forest fire in Montana where millions of acres burned. And the government at the time was like, we need somebody to manage the fires. So they created the National Forest Service.
Mm.
And so that's their primary role. And now 100 and so years later, it's like, oh, wait a sec. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place here. And we need new solutions. And the Cold Fire Project is an actual solution.
I love it.
Where we can capture all this carbon.
Yes.
You know, there's enough wealthy landowners in our area where we could launch this thing and have it be hyper successful. While I was in Portland, Oregon at the film festival, a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in years works at the Forestry Museum. Oh my God, I'm getting played out by the music.
I know.
Finish your speech, Hamilton. Jeez.
No.
Anyway,
no,
we have
been so good. This is so good.
We have a new ally in Portland. And awesome. When I told him about the Cold Fire Project, he was like, this is the first solution we've heard.
Yay. Well, you mark my words, listeners. Hamilton and I are solution-based people. We are thinking outside of the box, and we are going to support this community as we move forward into these new horizons. So, Hamilton, thank you for coming today. Everyone, check out.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, check out hamiltonsmushrooms.com, and I'll put the link to catch up with us later. All right, bye. Have a good day. Thank you for listening.